Ireland's Dream Machine is a Ross FM production funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.
Hardy all morning.
Yes.
John, you have some lovely products here, John. Would you like to tell me a little about them? What are these, John?
Here we are in Roscommon Market Square on a busy Friday afternoon, where John Tobin has a stall selling his art and craft work.
Oh yes, indeed, it's very decorative and it would look lovely on the table on Christmas Day. And what is this, John? So if you want some beautiful presents for Christmas, call to John Tobin at the Farmer's Market here in Roscommon.
John is 32 years old, from Williamstown, County Galway, and has cerebral palsy. This doesn't stop John, who is a well-known personality around Roscommon and Galway.
I first met John Tobin 11, maybe 12 years ago. I was a volunteer with the Brothers of Charity and I just came across him. He wanted a job. He didn't want a job like packing shelves and all that kind of stuff. So we decided to think outside the box. And I was doing some artwork at the time. And I remember I asked him, I said, why don't you come down and help me? So he started to help me to do some of the slates we used to do. Myself and Ed Garland and John, we used to do the slates. So John would paint them white and then I'd put in the windows and he'd do the windows. And then he'd do the roof. So that became sort of something we do. And then we decided we'd go into the farmer's market and we'd sell them in the farmer's market. So that was the first introduction to John. And as I said, we've been together now for 11 years, 12 years. He's one of my friends now. He's a very good friend of mine. As I said, he's one of those guys. He has a smile that would just, you know, if everybody had a smile like John Tobin, you know, the world would be a better place. He's always happy. There's always the, when you're sort of, I'm feeling down sometimes, you know, and I meet him in the market and he's just smiling at me. Again, people gravitate towards him because of his smile. He would be very well known around Roscommon. And again, I mean, his chair, it's like souped up chair, he just goes here, there and everywhere. To me, he is an amazing guy, really is.
John has a radio show on local community radio station Ross FM and is a big fan of country music.
We worked in the radio station. I had to listen to country music because that's where he wanted to play. And the likes of Mike Denver, Declan Ernie, you know, I mean, Michael English.
Hello, this is Michael English and you're listening to my good friend John Tobin on Ross FM 94.6.
John is a regular feature at country music events, at home and abroad.
And are you going again to Portugal?
I don't know yet.
Have you any idea?
Yeah.
You're going to go on your own?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And would you bring any girls with you?
No, yeah.
Not your mother?
You didn't do that John Tobin show. This is what if him not the boy band this with John Tobin. We couldn't ask for more.
John's mum tells us about his home and family life.
John is the second eldest of five children and he was born perfect but developed cerebral palsy shortly after his birth. And for a long time we found it difficult to come to terms, we'll say, with that. We had a lot of minding and caring to do in the early years of our marriage. But as the other children came along, they all helped with all the different things with John. And it became quite fun, really, to do and teach him all the different things. And my mother, God rest her, she taught him to cycle on a tricycle and on a little tricycle. And then once he did that, she sent away to Scotland for a bicycle for John with three wheels the same size. And it came and he learned to cycle and cycled for quite a long time. He attended St. Michael's School in Castlereagh for 12 years. He started actually here first in Roscommon with the Brothers of Charity in Cherry House, in the actual building that he's in right now at the moment. And he went there for 3 years to the preschool. And then he changed down to St. Michael's in Castlereagh for 12 years. And he went really, I have to say, from strength to strength. And I know that I love to talk about John, about the climb. And it was one of the greatest challenges, really, for us as a family. But I think there has been quite a number of challenges, really, for John down through the years. You know, I suppose maybe the fact that he learned to cycle too was a great thing, you know, because we never thought he'd ever be able to. Then in Castlereagh in St. Michael's, there was quite a number of sports, but John couldn't take part in any of them, really, because he wouldn't have been physically able to. So they came up with this plan that they'd take him to horse riding, which they did. And he has 6 gold medals from the Connacht Special Olympics. And then he went on to the National Special Olympics, where he has a silver and a bronze medal from. But that was as far as he went then with the horse riding. He still does a little bit of horse riding. He has a wonderful disposition, John has. He never, ever sees his wheelchair as an obstacle. Never. And sometimes when he's going to the centre or when he's going different places and he thinks about things that he will do, and we think as his parents that maybe you can't do that, John, you know, that would be physically unable for you to. And then he says, I'll work it. And sure enough, he works it. You know, he has that outlook on life that he wants to do everything. He never thinks, oh God, I can't do it because I'm in a wheelchair. It's just always positive with John.
Here's Clive Guthrie, who's John's friend and carer.
I'm Clive. I'm John's PA. I've been with John now for over 3 years. I work with him on a Sunday. We try and do interesting, different things. I try to make his day a special day so that he goes home with a buzz. It's usually something different if I can. For example, we went to Galway at Christmas the other year and managed to get him on the ice skating rink in his wheelchair, which he enjoyed. Anything different, we obviously go to the football matches. Everybody's well aware he's a big GA supporter. Galway, you know, is his team. And so we go to all the matches and meet many, many people. As a result of that, we got to meet the team, and on a regular basis, we go in the dressing room after the match. You know, the management team even actually came and did the climb with John. When I met him, I could see there was something about him. He got that wonderful smile that is, you could see it sort of brings joy to people. Very easy to approach, not just for someone like myself who is a carer, but for other people. Because of that smile, it draws people in. He is a very charismatic character that just needs to be on the go, needs to be doing something all the time.
John is clearly a very ambitious young man and eager to try lots of different activities. But John had his sights set higher, very high indeed.
We do all sorts of different weird, wonderful things. Holy Mountain, wheelchair, never been done before. It would be good. And John was up for that. And Anne took it on board. She said, well, you know, she's a sort of devout Catholic and climb Croke Patrick regular. And she said she'd always wished to go up Croke Patrick with John. And John's always wanted to go, but obviously, you know, it's just not possible. John immerses himself. He puts his faith, as his mum does, in the people that are around him that love him and support him. And I think his mum would know that we would never do anything that would put him at risk. I put together a small committee. We did it in a very short time. So I thought the best people to have were the people closest to John that love him and support him.
Crookpatrick, or the Reek as it is known, rises 750 metres above County Mayo. The mountain is an important site of pilgrimage in Ireland. It lies 8 kilometres from Westport, and each year it attracts about 1 million pilgrims. Local man Pádraic Needham talks about the mountain.
Over the whole year, I'd say up on 1 million people climbs it. It's spread out now besides how it used to be. It was a night pilgrimage in the 50s, 60s. It has changed now. It's a different situation. They're coming 7 days a week now, all year round. The big pilgrimage, the last Sunday of July, is down to 5,000 or 6,000 now, when they used to be 17,000, 18,000.
I have always climbed Crookpatrick. I climbed it about 9 times previous to John going up the mountain. I always felt when I was on the top, on the summit of Crookpatrick, that I would love to have John there. I never thought it would ever come to pass, obviously, but I did always think if he could ever look down over Clew Bay. If it's a fine day, you can see Clew Bay in the background, and it's an absolutely fabulous view. And that was what I prayed for John, that he'd actually be able to see Clew Bay in the background. And he did. At first, John was enthusiastic. John is enthusiastic about everything that he thinks he can do. Everything. But I would have been quite nervous about the whole thing from the beginning. In actual fact, I didn't talk about it much at home at first, because I thought that it would have been something that wouldn't come to pass. And usually if we think of things for John, we like to take them right through, because I never like to leave him like disappointed. I suppose that was why I was nervous about it, because I knew that he was in safe hands, really. The people that were doing it with him, and Basil and the civil defence, and all our own family, and Clive, his carer, that took a great part of this on. I knew that those people wouldn't let anything happen to John. The most reason I was afraid that it would go so far and then we actually wouldn't be able to do it, and we'd have let John down, you know.
Would this climb be possible? No one had ever attempted this before in a wheelchair, and John has certain medical considerations. A special chair would have to be built and the route worked out beforehand. Andrew Fox from Roscommon Civil Defence came on board as a member of the climb team.
God, we were playing Mayo in the Connacht Senior Football Final, maybe, or semi-final. I met John Tobin and Clive Guthrie. The usual, I said, "How are you, John? How are things? How are you all keeping?" You know, I said, "Oh, grand." I said, "Any news for me, John?" He said he's going climbing Crookpatrick. And I took a step back. I said, "Oh, this lad's having me on." I quizzed him a bit further. I said, "You're going climbing Crookpatrick?" Said, yeah. I knew fairly quick that he was actually serious, that he wasn't pulling my leg. We didn't really elaborate much more on it, really, but I don't think they had much detail, really, only that it was an aspiration. Met him then about a month after that, and I seen him, and I called him. I said, "How are you, John?" I said, "How is everything?" And he said, "Oh, good." I said, "When are you going doing your climb?" He said, "I'm not." He said, I said, "Why are you not doing it?" He said, "It's too hard. Obviously, there's challenges of getting up there." I said, "Leave it with me." Then I rang Ray Dunn in the Civil Defence to ask Ray, is there anything that we can do to assist him in the climb. So Ray said, absolutely. He said, whatever we can do. So Ray said to ring Basil and explain things to Basil. And Basil said, absolutely. As I was talking to Basil, you could hear the cogs turning in his head. He said, Basil is a genius, you know. I think Basil had it kind of planned out before the conversation was finished. The next step then, I rang Clive and I explained things to Clive. Clive was saying about contacting Anne, and that Anne was concerned about the safety of the whole lot of it. So I rang Anne and explained, you know, that how things would be done. After that conversation, Anne, her kind of concerns with safety had subsided, really, you know. And the biggest challenge was stating the obvious, I suppose, getting John up in one piece without a fall off the mountain. Because it had never been done before. If anything went wrong up the mountain, if a person needed medical care, how are they going to get off the mountain in a sharpish enough fashion? Would they have to be airlifted off the mountain, which would more likely have to be what would have had to happen? One of our civil defence colleagues, Adrian Daly, he is an emergency medical technician. Adrian's full-time job, he works with the ambulance service. And Adrian came up the mountain with us. But in the dream machine, Basil built in cage to carry oxygen. So we carried oxygen and medical supplies. We carried it up the mountain with us.
And so the date was set. September the 10th, 2016 would be the date for the climb. and the next important thing to do was to check out the mountain itself and decide on the best way to climb it. Basil Finan from the Civil Defence team tells us more.
I grew up in an engineering background. My father and his people before him, they were trap builders and escart builders and horse cart builders. And as things moved on then, it moved into agricultural machinery and we got involved in that. And then when I finished school, I went and I did computer engineering. I joined Civil Defence then, and as things progressed then, I spent a week with a crowd from Civil Defence of volunteers. We went over to Wales for a week to outreach training in heights rescue in Snowdonia. We spent a week on the mountains there. I was in the Civil Defence Centre one night and Andrew Fox happened to come on to me. He mentioned John Tobin. Someone mentioned, would he be able to claim Crowpatrick? Andrew says, what do you think about that? Would it be possible for him to claim Crowpatrick? So I says, well, there's going to be a machine built for him, and I says, it could be done all right. Weeks after, Andrew rang me, he says, will you go ahead and make that? I claimed Crowpatrick then on Rig Sunder, the conventional route, as a reconnaissance, but that wasn't a viable proposition at all. There was too much rock and gullies in it, and too much loose stone on the top, and too much uneven ground that was, no matter what vehicle you go up, it turned over. So the other alternative was to go up the back route where the donkeys used to go. So myself and Andrew Fox planned it anyway. 2 weeks before the claim, we went back and we had to walk up where the donkeys went, but that was too narrow to take any kind of a wheeled chair, and a very steep drop off to the right-hand side in by a place they called the Black Wall. So we went back up to the donkey track and Anne and her husband stayed near the jeep and myself and Andrew went up the side of the mountain, almost to the summit. And it was a lovely clear day and we could get a great view around, so we could see the lie of the mountain where this man's house was, John Bonner's house. Figured that that was the best route to take anyway. Going up the route and coming back, I knew that whatever type of vehicle we were going to build, that it'd have to be able to lean forward, sideways, backwards, and I would need 100 metre ropes. I had several designs in my head to build it. It was always like adventure films when I was a young buck, looking at them. And I remember a film called Bin Hur, and there was a chariot race in it. And I says, the chariot now is kind of the way to go. I says, two wheels and a wheel in front, that'll do a 360 degree turn. And I was thinking then of how I'd get the machine to stabilise. So I put the thinking cap on now. This is only 6 days before the claim and nothing built. So I thought of, anyway, if I get two handlebar shocks out of a scrambler motorbike and put one of them each side, that would do the job and I'd be able to tension them according to the way the machine. So that's what I did. So I sent Andrew shopping for two motorbike forks on with. The climb was on a Saturday. Tuesday morning I started cutting iron to build this machine. And I wound up with a machine with two motorbike forks under it, a heavy cross frame, and a heavy tubular frame around about it. And it was strong, it wasn't actually very heavy, but it was a 3/4 inch gun barrel. So I shaped it like a beetle. I put a good cross frame in it, and it was because John's chair would have to hang on that. His chair had to be able to swing forward. He had to be able to swing sideways and forward and back. So it was like a cradle hanging within it. And I put gas shocks out on that one. The motorbike forks were oil shocks. I went ahead with that plan anyways, and I made the cradle and I got an old chair that John's mother had given me. And I built a little platform in the cradle and I attached the chair to it. Quick release. I kept at it anyways, and Friday morning, a local man happened to come in anyways, and he says, do you want to spin in this yoke to see how it's going? And he sat into it and he said, Jesus, that's very comfortable. Because my old yard was rough out in one spot out the back, and I pulled him across it and he said, Jesus, that's very comfortable. He says, I can't get over how comfortable it is. It's like sitting in an armchair. The health and safety aspect of it, everything had to be built so that no matter what happened, if it overturned or anything or went down in a rut or got caught and someone pulled hard, it wasn't going to collapse or break. So I made sure of that. That's where your engineering brain kind of comes into play. And I had it strengthened at all the critical stress points. Then as we were climbing, going up, ascending a mountain, I had to think of John's need for oxygen if he got bad. So I put in a little cradle for holding cylinders of oxygen. And we had that built into the chair as well. And the actual dream machine, we called it, John's dream machine.
John wanted to use the climb as a fundraiser to raise monies for various charities close to his heart. They set about the fundraising with a little help from his friends in the music industry.
When we realised that it was actually going to happen and that Basil Finan from the Civil Defence was going to actually make a chair to take John to the summit, we decided then that there was no point in doing it unless we did a little bit of fundraising and collected a little bit of money for the charities. We decided then to do it for charities that are close to John's heart. Well, I suppose the Brothers of Charity are the closest thing that John has, of course, because he attends there every day. Then we wanted to do it for John's centre, really, so that it would be used in the centre that John is in. Not specifically for John, but to help the people that he attends along with. And then Join Our Boys, which is very close to John's heart because he loves those boys. And they're very, very kind to John too, and they love to go around with him. And Craig's National School, because they have a hydrotherapy pool, which they always ask us to and are very kind to us. Ability West, because John, on a few occasions, attended Ability West for just over the summer on a summer camp. And we know quite a few people anyway in Ability West. In Glenimady, we wanted to do it for the Glenimady group because they're the people that we always had an affinity with. Where Clive works, John's carer in Cushla, it's the outreach centre, and we wanted to help those people as well because Clive is so good to John.
Did a country music night down in the Shearwater. You know, the lads in the country music scene have been really, really good to him. They, you know, I mean, no matter where he goes, they treat him like a superstar, and the likes of Mike Denver, Declan Ernie, you know, I mean, Michael English, the amount of people that turned up to it and knew him, would know John.
Hello everybody, this is Jimmy Buckley here, and you're listening to my good friend John Tobin on Ross FM 94.6. He's one of my great friends.
Hello, I'm Dominic Kerwin. You're listening to John Tobin on Ross FM 94.6.
Now, we thought maybe 5,000, 7,000. Those figures were the figures that we had imagined would be what we'd collect. But it far surpassed that. Like, there was almost €25,000 raised from the 4th of June to the 10th of September, which was absolutely colossal amount of money for such a small venture, really.
The day of the climb dawned, bright and clear, after a week of rain leading up to it.
I loaded my dream machine on the trailer behind my Jeep on Friday evening, and Friday was a very, very wet, windy day, pure gale and downpours of rain, and the next morning was bright and sunny.
The day of the climb, we got up at about 5:30. I can't say that I slept very well the night before that.
Did you sleep the night before? No. Because the excitement was great, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was great, excitement. And Clive, of course, was on the ball and came very early for us, didn't he?
Yeah.
We got up to a lovely fine morning, which was a bonus to start off with. We were quite nervous, I suppose, really, you know, that the day had actually arrived and that we were there and we were thereabout, and wondered how it would all pan out, really. Clive, John's carer, arrived to take us to Croagh-Patrick. When we arrived in Williamstown, Clive had arranged that with the motorbike crew that they'd all escort us right through from Williamstown the whole way to Croagh-Patrick, which was quite emotional, really, because at all the roundabouts and the turnoffs, we went straight through. They were there to escort us the whole way. And John was getting quite emotional at this stage, although I have to say he never really down through his life got very emotional at anything. You know, he laughs at most things, wouldn't like he never really cried at many things down through his life, you know. So we didn't expect that. We thought he'd laugh all day. Like when we arrived then and there was people there to making chiefers and scones and there was loads of people from Williamstown there and the community just came out in their droves. I suppose that's one of the things that really was huge for us. It was the community spirit, you know, that everybody wanted to be there.
I remember on the way down, I was very focused on what we were about to do.
Got ready there and we got John ready. We took the dream machine off the trailer, put everything into place, and bolted in the chairs on it and got all ready for John. And when John was ready, then we put him into it and we buckled him in. I had safety harnesses on it and tied him in and secured him.
Seeing the climb that lay ahead of us, I just thought to myself, oh God, this is going to be a touch and go. I'd say that most people, if they're honest, probably thought the same, God, this is going to be quite a challenge. But still, with all, when you get out there, the enormity of it takes your breath away a little bit. And when we went up that morning, looking at John and the dream machine and looking at the top of Kirkpatrick, it looked like a million miles away.
A sight I had never seen before, to be honest. Just something else. They put him into this chair, into his bike and everything on it. I had the donkeys ready to go to Tome, to the top of Crow Paddock. I had a jinnet ready, which would have pulled him up, but they said no, they wanted to do it their way. And if all failed, that I'd be called on. But they'd done it, no problem. It was amazing now. It was amazing, yeah. To something else.
John himself was eager, very excited now, and I know John for a long time and I hadn't seen him this excited in a long time. And I had him faced forward and he was able to look at the mountain and he saw everything. He could get a great look as he was going. I don't think the lad realised what he was about to embark on. As far as he was concerned, I suppose, it was going to be the voyage of a lifetime. They were very eager first, they went off at an awful pace. But they slowed back and it was after a quarter of a mile or so. They followed on and it was, and the locals, John Welch and his crew, there was two drains, two old bad rocky gorges, and they had planks put across for to bring the machine across. We came on some hairy spots and we rested here and there. There was eight people around the chariot at the whole time, from start to finish. As a safety aspect, there was four each side. When we got to the bottom of the steep piece, everybody sat back and we had a relaxation period. And myself and John was contemplating, and he was explaining to me about the mountain. He says, the quad bikes can go up it, he says, and they could give a hand pull, and he says, but they can't stop, or they won't get a grip and they'll throw stones back. So he says, that's a no-go. So I says, we'll let the long ropes out now. And he says, we'll put the people sitting on the ground and pull their ropes hand over hand. I explained that to everybody. Of course, when they started off, they went about 25 yards, pushing, they didn't want the ropes, but the backs of the legs was getting tired. So I says, when you're sitting now, just do what you were told, sit and pull, and everybody up to the ends of the ropes. So there was about 20 people on each rope, and they sat and pulled it through their hands, so they were bringing the dream machine. On every pole, it was coming about 75 metres uphill, and the eight people were still around John's dream machine to keep that stabilised, and if it needed the brake on, they'd tip it up.
We weren't sure, well, I certainly wasn't sure up until we reached a certain point if it would be possible or not. For various reasons, and kind of obvious kind of reasons, I wasn't sure. But when we got so far, you could see the momentum building. People start getting, you know, more energy, and sure, John kept everybody going. And John was shouting from the chair. He said, come on, push harder. Come on, push harder. And it was, you know, it was great humour for us, you know, kind of.
And what were you saying to Basil on the way up?
Go on.
Well, and poor Basil was out of breath, wasn't he?
Thank you.
And all the TJ and Stephen and them all trying to get their breath, pulling you, and every time they said, we'll have a little rest. Mm. What did John say?
Go on.
You didn't allow them any rests at all, did you, John?
About halfway up the mountain, looking out over the distance and over the horizon, and it was just, the view was just incredible, you know. And I think people started to believe this is going to happen. So we got up near the foot of the mountain and my whole body was shaking with excitement. I was just I knew this was going to happen. Like,
the atmosphere was electric, really. And we landed on the top, and then we could watch John coming up, and that, I will live with that forever. It was just a fabulous sight to see him coming up onto the mountain.
On the day, a bloke called Pat Cafferkey, otherwise known as Pat the Piper, climbed up Croke Patrick with the bagpipes to play for John. The bagpipes resonated in and around the mountain. It was fantastic. It just added to that very emotional day.
Just as John came onto the mountain, then, like, there was a huge cheer, and everybody and was there, and the people that had come up the conventional route, and there was a huge crowd there.
But it was lovely, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you looked down over Clew Bay, didn't you?
Hmm? Yeah.
And what did you think about that?
Yeah.
It was amazing, wasn't
yeah.
it? Absolutely amazing.
There was American tourists, and they were looking at this, that, and a clue what all this commotion was. And I remember when he got up the top of the mountain, like, I was crying. Like, I was very emotional when it happened. And so was everybody else. Like, I doubt there was a dry eye in the top of the mountain, you know.
I felt a great sense of achievement when we got up to the summit. There was a great hooray. A lovely fine day, and you could see for miles. You could see all out across Clue Bay in 360-degree circle. John was crying, and I wouldn't be a man that would be crying around him, but it brought tears to my eyes.
Of course, John was absolutely surrounded, and I said to people, if you just move out of the way, let John soak this in, because he couldn't see. I said to John, just take a look, because the views are stunning at Croke Patrick. And I said, you've not only got up here, you're the first person ever, since the only person ever to get up here in a wheelchair, but I said, you're lucky you can see the views. Many people can't come up here, all the effort to get up here, and can't see it.
There was a man there then that said that he'd open up the church for us, but then we didn't think that we'd be able to take John into the church, because John was wrapped up with all the special warming gear. We thought we wouldn't be able, but in actual fact, some of the lads took him out of the chair and carried him into the church, and we put him sitting on the little seat there in front of the altar.
1:03 we landed at the top, so it was 3 hours and 2 minutes to climb it and bring him up. It was nice and fine. So then we had to start our descent, and it was similar. The ropes, again, was, and the crew around the chair, but everybody worked together, and like, it was a great, huge team effort. Like, I mentioned a few people there and mentioned myself, but unless you had a good team backing you up, this wouldn't happen. It was a great sense of camaraderie in it as well, because every man, woman and child were on the ropes, which was a great thing to see.
You know, looking back, I just have to say that the chair was only finished on the Thursday, would you believe? And the climb took place on the Saturday. I went to Basel on the Thursday evening and just went down to fit John in the chair, really, like, and we went around Basel Street and we had a bit of a laugh at it all. And he said, oh, I'll have to paint it now. And I said, oh, can you paint it maroon, you know, for maroon and white for Galway? And he said, God, you don't want much, he said, you know. How am I going to paint that now between here and Saturday? But he did. Fair play to Basel. He had it painted in the 3 county colours. So Galway, Roscommon and Mayo.
A lot of them said that he wouldn't make it. You'll have to be called on, Porrick. You'll have to put your donkey in motion. But lucky enough, no, he made it. They made it. He had great help. It was talked about a lot at that time. Yeah. Anybody can go when John went.
When he went back to Williamstown that night, I think the whole town was, the whole village was out. In doing the climb, there was 5 charities sort of benefit from it. The presentation of the monies was a night in itself, which was a lovely night as well.
The week after was the All-Ireland final. Of course, when it comes to All-Ireland final days, if any team from the west of Ireland gets through, obviously we would love if it was always Galway. But if it can't be Galway, then any other team from the west that gets through, then we shout for them.
What team did you shout for in the top of the mountain?
Mayo.
Oh, Mayo. Oh, my God. Mike Denver wasn't too happy about that one, was he? Eh? He said you're a traitor, didn't he, when he met you? Shouting for Mayo, but why did you shout for Mayo? Yeah, because you were up on the mountain in Mayo, and they were the last team in the West, weren't they? And we always, always have to shout for the last team in the West.
I got a phone call after the event from a lady from, it's a sort of prestigious magazine called The Outsider. The lady said, you've been nominated for an award. But she said, I think you might even stand a chance. And you guessed it, John won, the most inspiring person of the year.
I gave the boogie to John and his family. I presented them that John might make use of it. And so John brought it after football matches and everything. I think he went round Pierce Stadium in Galway.
If we'd done it again, there's nothing we would change. And I know that for John's own self or development, it gave John a massive boost, because I would have met him around the town prior to that. You know, I would have known John for years, of course, through my work. I wouldn't say not confident. I don't know how you would describe it. But I felt that after the event, something had changed in John. Like, he was 10 foot taller. Like, everybody would have known of John from around the town. People would wave at John, but I don't think they really knew who John was. And I think after that event, I used to be driving through the town, and you could see two or three people gathered around John, talking to him, and, you know, he was like a celebrity, you know. And I think it really brought him on, because from more people talking to him, I think it gave him that boost and that lift, and it was terrific.
Since the climb, John has actually, you can have a different conversation with him. I noticed that in the market even. And people weren't coming over and just saying, how are you, John? They were coming over and talking to him about the climb and different conversations. And he was having conversations with them.
I think it was great for youngsters from, most of the youngsters now that were there would be locals. And I think it'll be a great memory for those young kids to have been involved in something like that, and to see what can be achieved when you have ambition to do it and not afraid.
It's just an unbelievable experience. Like, when you'd be sitting an old man telling the story, you can still feel the excitement in your body. You know, it just hasn't left. Even recalling the story, you kind of feel the goosebumps and the energy. The energy was so positive. We used to say it at the time, like, when we were going up the mountain, like, you know, John's energy is carrying us up the mountain, you know. It was a big thing for Anne Tobin too, like, to be fair. Like, Anne Tobin deserves huge credit, because without Anne, it couldn't have happened. Because I'm sure Anne, being John's mum, even with the kind of concerns for John's safety, kind of, you know, alleviated, and the process kind of explained, it took great courage to be able to just say, you know, it's okay, this can happen. That took a lot of courage, because I have no children myself, but I can only imagine that seeing a child that's vulnerable kind of putting themselves at risk, even though the risk is negated as much as possible, they're still putting themselves at risk. And it took great courage for Anne to allow it to take place, you know. And I suppose that's something that I suppose that people would forget.
Anne, John's mum, nothing's impossible. She's great in the sense, the whole family are the same. They always treat John, if John wants to do something, they go the extra mile to try and get him to do it.
He has got to know so many people from the climb. It has really made him a little celebrity, really. And people from everywhere, from all corners and everywhere. And we go an awful lot of places because John is always out and about. We love to go places together, and everybody knows him from the climb.
Does everybody think you're a celebrity now, John?
Yeah.
And every place you go, do you meet people that you know? Yeah. Everywhere you go, don't you? Yeah. And everybody comes along to us and says, what should we say? Hello, John, how are you today?
This is John Tobin.
Hi, this is Stephen here at Michael Henry's band. You're now listening to John Tobin on Ross FM 94.6.
Hi, this is David Kiernan, and you're listening to John Tobin on Ross FM.
Into the John Tobin show. This is what if him not the boy band. This was John Tobin. We couldn't ask for more. Yeah.
John's Dream Machine is a Ross FM production funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. This programme was produced by Fiona Dunn, sound engineer Niamh Loftus, researched by Martina Dockery and Bernie Kearney.